Every day in Lent, we get a rich instruction on the spiritual life, an instruction that will help us in our Lenten pilgrimage. Today's readings bring up a couple of important elements. One is the work of the evil one, Satan, or Beelzebul, as he's called in the Gospel. And the other is this problem that is on our side, that is refusal to believe, refusal to follow, what the scriptures refer to as hardness of heart. Now, they're connected, of course, because Satan loves it when we harden our hearts. But it is still two different things, because one, Satan, he has his own work and he has his own, realm, and there are limits to what he can and can't do. The hardness of heart part, that's what we do. So let's just address this issue of the evil one first. The gospel starts with Jesus driving out a demon. He does this a lot. And it always works. Every single time he drives out demons. He never loses. Along come some people and say, well, Jesus gets the power to do this from Satan, from Beelzebul, the prince of demons. There are, I mentioned this a couple of days ago when Jesus was rejected by his own people of Nazareth. I said then, and I'm saying it again now, there are a lot of different reasons why people reject Jesus. But when you look closely at them, none of them is very convincing. Back in that episode about where the people of Nazareth drove him out of town, well, their reason for rejecting him was very, very shallow. It was basically prejudice, a little bit of indignation that he had insulted them. It wasn't like he was a bad person, but all of a sudden they wanted to kill him. Well, here, there's another, well, at least irrational reason for rejecting him. Probably the resistance has more to do with the hardness of heart than it has to do with a rational evaluation of evil going on, because it's obvious that this is not evil. The driving out of a demon is not an evil work. That's not what Satan does. He doesn't kick himself out or kick out his demons. Remember, what Satan's goal is always to kick God out or to cut us off from God. He and the demons, they prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. That's in the prayer to St. Michael. They prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. That's what they want. So they're not going to kick each other out. They hate each other, it's true, but they don't oppose their own reign. Okay. So, and Jesus says, well, it makes no sense to say that I'm working by the power of evil. So one of the things we have to do is be able to discern what's genuinely evil and what's not. What's really a work of Satan and what's not? This question was in my mind this morning when I woke up. In the night, I had terrible, terrible nightmares. I don't remember them at all right now, but all I remember is the feeling of fear. And the first time I woke up, I said, oh, sometimes it's a relief to wake up. So I woke up, I said, oh, whatever that was, something was falling apart, I suppose. Anyway, whatever it was, I remember thinking, I'm afraid to fall back asleep. I don't want that to happen again. Of course, I prayed to St. Michael, prayed the Hail Mary. Probably within about two Hail Marys, I fell back asleep. I was exhausted. It happened again. And the second time, at least in my memory, now who knows, in the middle of the night, I think I might have shouted. In my dream, I shouted, and I think that's what woke me up. Whatever it was really terrified me, and I was really tense. Now, of course, I fell right back asleep, and I don't remember what it was. Now, was that the evil one? Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe it was just my psyche, you know, maybe something I ate, maybe it's my blood sugar, you know, maybe tension about whatever's coming up, who knows? But did it have the effect of ruining my soul? Well, no, because it moved me to pray. So, and this is the problem Satan always has. Whatever weapons he has, he always has to borrow from God. So if he wants to frighten us, the possibility is that it might backfire on him. And he does, all temptations are like this. He has to use something good to try to ruin our soul. And the possibility is always there that that good thing might appeal to us more than the evil that he's introducing. He doesn't have any weapons of his own. Because pure evil, if there was such a thing, actually there isn't any such thing, but if there was such a thing as pure evil, it wouldn't appeal to us at all. It wouldn't even be a temptation. So ugly. So he uses something good, a lesser good, to take us away from a higher good. But that lesser good is still good. So you think of, maybe I shouldn't go into this, because I want to get to this hardness of heart thing. But the example that comes to mind is when, say, a man goes out on a drinking spree. Okay, drunkenness is a sin. Drunkenness is, it will ruin the soul. But the man experiences a certain kind of joy. His camaraderie with his buddies, a little bit of relaxation, and all those things are good. And so if he goes home at night and thinks, oh, that was fun, well, that doesn't bear any, that doesn't ruin his soul, because that's, he's giving thanks for what's good. Now, he could also go home and feel regret, or be afraid of his hangover, or will I be able to work in the morning, and what did I say when I was drunk, and all those things. Well, those things, Satan can use those. But you see, the good things are still good. The fellowship, the relaxation. Okay. So maybe it's a bad example, but my point is, Satan has to use good things, but he gives away a few. Who's the saint that says he's willing to claim a diamond, he's willing to throw away a few rubies? What is that? Is that from St. Teresa or some St. Teresa? Anyway, I think it's from St. Teresa of Avila. Anyway, in other words, he has to give away something. Otherwise, he won't be able to catch us at all. But in this case, Satan isn't gaining anything by this man being free, set free. He's not gaining anything. So it can't be him. He doesn't waste his time giving away what's good without gaining something better, or at least trying to. So Jesus says, it should be obvious to you that if I'm driving out demons by Beelzebul, well, that isn't that just the collapse of Beelzebul's kingdom anyway? And not only that, by whom do your people drive out demons, the exorcists among the Jews? So then he says, well, it must be by the finger of God that I drive out demons. I always love that expression. It just takes one finger. It only takes one finger to drive out demons. It's like that dust off the corner of your desk. That's the comparison between the power of God and the power of evil. Okay, so that's one thing. Now, the other thing that comes out strongly in these readings, and maybe more clearly in the first reading, is this problem that is not all attributable to Satan. It is a human problem, and that is hardness of heart. Jeremiah's description of it is quite clear. They obeyed not, God talking about his own people, whom he has called, the very ones he's entering into a covenant with. They obeyed not, nor did they pay heed. They walked in the hardness of their evil hearts and turned their backs, not their faces, to me. Satan was involved, but they're the ones who did this. They hardened their evil hearts to God. And this is really the problem in us. We might be tormented or tempted or distracted by Satan. He lies to us, he divides us, and he does all kinds of things. But if we don't give in to him, we can actually grow from the experience of temptation, right? That's why God allows it. He allows trials and tests so that our faith grows. So if we resist Satan, we actually get better, and that it backfires on him. But if we resist God, it's a disaster, because we're cutting ourselves off from our own lifeline. And this is the danger that Lent is especially aware of. That's why there's constant call to conversion, constant call to repentance. Don't harden your heart against God, of all things. Don't pretend that you're fine. Don't resist the action of the Holy Spirit. Don't refuse the truth and say that it's not true. Don't live a lie, because that only leads to your own destruction. This is what Jeremiah's complaint, or actually God says to Jeremiah, I'm going to send you to them and they won't listen to you. And Jeremiah says again and again in his book, and they don't listen to me. Here I'm going, I'm giving them the truth, I'm giving them the word, and they don't listen to me. This is always the cry of the prophets. Hardness of heart on the part of those who hear. I saw an article recently, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, about Pope Francis. Very recently, maybe within the last week, he gave a very strong criticism of gender ideology. And he's done this before. He clearly sees the danger of this idea that people can change their gender or define their own gender. And so he made a very strong statement about how ugly this is. Was that anywhere in the press? Did anybody hear about that? No, it wasn't in CNN. And one of the commentaries was, when Pope Francis says something that doesn't agree with the narrative of the media, you don't hear about it. And then Pope Francis can say, they're not listening, they're not listening to me. But a few months ago, Pope Francis came out with another statement on the climate, what he calls the climate crisis. And he said, I put out an encyclical 5 years ago, and no one listened to me. You know that document, Laudato Si, it came out, I think it was 5 years ago. And this was a follow-up document. He said, it's getting worse and nobody's listening. So it's this the cry of the prophet. People just don't listen. And now, those are two completely different social agendas, right? The climate crisis issue is generally considered a progressive concern, and the gender ideology or opposing gender ideology is considered more of a conservative thing. That's not the point, my point here. My point is, it's a very common phenomenon in the human family to harden our hearts against what we don't want to hear. And Lent is telling us, the Lord is telling us, don't do that, don't do that. If today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. If today you hear his voice, whatever he might be saying something appealing, he might be saying something convicting, he might be saying something that enlightens us, or a truth that scatters the lies that we have been believing. He might be pointing out a sin, he might be pointing out a way in which we can love our neighbor better. Whatever he's saying, don't harden your heart to him. If today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts.